Real talk.
I mean, it's hard to do, though. It's really difficult. It's like, lost my mums, lost my pops, moved out of my house, was homeless for basically 6 months, something like that. It just, you know, things grind on you, and then, but right now I look like I'm worth a million, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the truth be told, a lot of it's a facade. Everybody wants to look fly and fresh and fucking make everybody think that they're winning. How many people have you said to, you're all right, mate? And they go, yeah. And you full well know they're not. The Killer Keller podcast. Killer Keller official.com.
Street Culture TV.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Oh, gee.
Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast live in direct central London, as central as you need to be, choose to be, want to be. You don't want to be anywhere else. We've all had a drink. It's Saturday and we're having a good time. Yo, big shout out to the sharers and carers, people that have been topping us up with nothing but the good love, the sharing and caring, and the ever expansion of eyes and ears on the show. We thank you. Our sponsors, the mighty GK Nifty Heads, have a massive 100,000 play-to-earn NFTs to give away to the streets. Just hit the link in the description or go to gkniftyheads.com and get ready for HODL Wars Summer 2024. South London, stand up. If you don't know about this gentleman, his versatilities across graffiti as well as rapping, I mean, we're talking about a one-stop shop in creative output. He's like the Lemmy Kilminster of fucking UK hip-hop, bro. The mighty Cope inside the place.
Yes, my brother. Everything blessed?
Yeah, everything's good. How are you?
We are here at last. We made this fucking thing happen,
we made
bro.
Happen.
How did we do this at last?
Dripped in polo, make me feel a little bit, pale in comparison. I mean, this is your lifestyle, but honestly, and I can't, I just don't know how to give you more higher praise on the intro, because you literally, not only have you been there alongside me from, because we've only worked out we're the same age as each other.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen every single moment, jam. There's been not been a jam where you haven't been there. Freestyling somewhere, tagging somewhere, like, you're that guy.
If there's something on, man, it's me, you know. Like, I just can't help it. I'm that dude that just loves to get beat. If it's happening, I'll go there. My mum always used to go, you're not going to miss anything if you don't go. Yes, I am. And then I come back with her lyric again. That was such a non-eventful event. But I was there and I went to see it and checked it out and I was there. You know what I mean?
Really? So, what's the ratio of like an uneventful event compared to a good one on your... Because like you're out literally like three or four times a night. A week, so how many go?
Yeah,
and
a night
actually,
for real, for
so,
real.
So what's the batting average?
Basically, years ago, there was open mic every day, but it wasn't even open mics. It was jam sessions, and then it was actually hip-hop nights, you know, like late 90s, early 2000s. That was amazing. Like, first thing that was really an open mic platform for any artist that was really getting down was Guy Alive upstairs at the Truman Brewery, which was AM and... Oh, WMDM again. Anyway, there was two dudes. There was AM and... Oh, fuck it, it's just missed me. But I know that since 96, and that put the... Like, Kalashnikov was there, Estelle was there. My man Bobby basically said to Estelle, why don't you rhyme, put her on a beat? And that was the beginning of that stuff, you know what I mean?
What?
But this is like... This is 96, 97. Guy Alive, it was live internet stream. Every Monday
where
night.
Where was it? Whereabouts was it?
Upstairs in the Truman Brewery.
Truman. Listen, you need to Google that shit if you don't know. I'm sure there's something out there.
It must be some fire somewhere,
be.
Yeah.
So that original first space that you were introduced to?
Well, basically, it was like a first real set. I was always on open mics and jam sessions and whatnot. I've always, like, my uncle had a jazz club in Camberwell, has a jazz club in Camberwell. There's always music, you know what I mean? And obviously, the musicians would always go to jam sessions. Jam sessions were the first open mics, really.
You could go there,
there'd be 10 dudes that didn't know each other from anywhere. They'd be playing something. One dude would be on the sax, somebody, and just a break. You just get your 8 bars, and then before you know it, okay, he's kind of nice.
So how old were you when that happened? Because I've got to keep a navigation on this one, because there's so much history with you. We've already talked about it. Trust me, this is going to be a big podcast. Right? So first of all, you had an uncle that had a jazz club. How old were you at that time?
Basically, the jazz club was made when I was about 14. I actually helped knock the walls down that were in the crypt of the church in Camberwell. to put, and we used the uprights from the walls to actually make the stage, and it's still in place right now.
Really?
Yeah, 100%.
Made with your fair hands.
Yeah, man, bust that up, deal with it proper.
And you had a load of like artists that used to come through.
Basically, every Friday night there was a live band in there, and there still is every Friday night. And the thing was, for me, I just get to see these. I'd always meet these same dudes all the time out on the circuit playing in jam sessions. Like, there was a jam session up in the middle of the West End on a Tuesday night. There was another jam session. Well, basically, it was Monday was Guy Alive. Tuesday was the jam session in the West End. Wednesday, they the dump that used to run Funkin' Pussy used to do a night.
The dump? Oh, bro, now you just threw me back to a time. Yo, wicked.
They used to do a night just off Soho Square. And then Thursdays would be... I think it was Magnetron. No. Yeah, Magnetraction Thursdays, which was in Brixton at Mass. Mm-hmm. And then Fridays, there used to be the Mac at the Plug.
That's right.
Underworld. Yes, Underworld, right. In Camden. Yeah. And then Saturday nights would be like Breaking Bread which then I went on to host, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, the Sin Stars there and Tough Car.
Yeah, and we used to pay B-Boys to come in purposely. Skig. It was a breakers night. It was pure funk breaks. And I used to host the open mic. I got on the open mic, I was nice with it, and then I got invited to host it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we went up and down the country with that too, so...
You also come from a sound system background, don't you?
Yeah, my uncles had a sound system when I was younger, so there was always records. They weren't much older than me, probably 10 years maybe, but they were 15 when I was 5, but when I was like 3... They were playing that same music. They were buying records, they had music. And when I was like, I kind of was born 78 when hip hop started. Mm. So come 1984, I wanted a scratch on their records and get in trouble. I was,
you're in the mix.
I was
already.
A B-boy, I was breakdancing 100%. And my nan used to kick me out to go over to the Adventure Playground. And so I just get kicked out over the road, and I'd be there. And the first time that I ever put paint on a wall was there in that playground, well, the park across the road from my nan's. And that was, I was like 6. It was like, go over there, I don't want you in the house. And they were painting the wall, and I asked them if I could do some. And I painted blue black ground until about 9:30 at night when my nan come and got me, and I found out the hard way. But yeah, I was covered in blue paint, and that was the start of it.
Really,
yeah, I never stopped.
Starts with the blue, never look back.
Yeah, it's that, for real, for real.
You're, and again, it's kind of a meter for me when I think of hardcore hip-hop heads, or rave heads, more broadly, because you're the... not only are you an okay sign, that if a jam's on and the streets need to hear about it, because you're offline, like, a majority of it, you don't fucking... So it's like, if you're doing something good, then you'll be there. Like, the word is spread. And
well,
I think that's...
This is the thing for me, it's just like, it's always been word of mouth. It's what the walls are, you know what I mean? You can only see where someone's been by looking at the walls. You can't find any trace of any normal human being that just walks up and down that road, even if they get off that same train station every day and go to that same house. If you don't see them doing that, you don't see them. But a writer will go anywhere and everywhere that they go, they put their name up. It's the only crime that you fucking leave your name at every single time. Do you know what I'm saying? But you read the walls and you can tell, oh, yeah, I know why my man went over and come up this way and walked up that road, because, oh, I see, it was with such and such on that same pen. I know where they went to get that draw there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you just,
because you don't use tubes neither, you use buses.
I bus, and you, I'm all over the place, but buses, for real, because I was born in South London. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I found out years later, where I was born in Camberwell, is the guy that put the bus map together was Eccentric, and his wife worked as a nurse, and so she'd be in any part of London on any given day, but the map was designed so every bus went through Camberwell. It's a weird old thing, but
that's crazy.
For real, I found this out, I don't know, I must have even been 18 when I found that out.
So you clocked the network, you understand?
Yeah, the buses was all of it. I had Denmark Hill, and that's it, just one BR station. Or you go Elephant Castle, Brixton, Oval. You set speed, you can go anywhere now. It's all on.
Yeah, all on.
All on.
You are south and south. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's it. There weren't no
we were talk. We were kind of talking about this in the pub because, I said it before because, you know, I came up through South London coming in through Croydon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is where, you know, I'd go to places like that Soiree Jam. Do you remember that Soiree
yeah,
Jam?
Yeah, fucking madness.
Yeah, yeah, Deck
there's
Effects.
Places like flipping Twilights and all them kind of mad.
And so South has, I've always known that if I stayed in South for too long, I would adhere to that, like you say, ever-ready lifestyle of just the cultural lifestyle. It's not a day job, this thing. It's like 24/7.
It's full hand-to-hand combat, brother. It really is. Yeah. It's everything. Like, for me, I'm just there every day. We've got a pub that we called HQ until we got kicked out, but, you know, we'll just leave that to that own matter. But, I'm there every day of the week. I'm on the same streets. If you want to find me, I'm in Stockwell. I'm there. And if anything's going on, I'm there too. If there's a music happening, if there's a concert happening, there's no way I'm paying to get in a concert. I'll walk up to the door. And 9 out of 10 times I can get through the door. Touch wood.
Okay, hold on. Right, so here, the trade secrets are now being exposed from Cope. Right? So tell me how does that come about? Because I see people do it, you know. I will shout out Billy Spliff at this point because he seems to have some sort of, these aren't the droids you're looking for, Jedi mind tricks.
Yeah, that's exactly where it is. It's like,
really?
We've been here doing this. I'm sure you've seen me before. You're right, bro. How you doing? Yeah. He's inside. He told me to come. Until you go to Sunny Gym at the Hootenanny and the Hootenanny kicked me out and they don't like me and they may be standing with a wristband on my wrist.
How very dare you? A fucking wristband on him. On Cope, you kidding me?
Well, yeah, that's it. I don't get wristbands, but no. I just go through. You know, no. I just make my way in.
Yeah.
I'm that dude that went over the fence.
Yeah. Big up Sunny Jim, by the way. To be fair to Sunny, he's only lives around the corner, so he's, you know, his timeline was completely off going over the river.
Well, basically, Sunny used to come out to open mics that I used to host, right? Years of, like, probably 99. I met up with Manage CLG, DX.
Hold tight, New Cross Crew.
And CLG, and we did a track then. That was in 99. And since then, from there, but it was DJ Manipulator who was with us at the same time. And so that was Manager's DJ, and that was Defcon Records then.
Yeah, times, that's right. Defcon,
out of town.
Yeah.
So we used to do all of that. And then we was in every part. There was just parties. There was something all the time. But then there was that whole squat scene, and then it was, you know... I was in all every party, literally, which is like the squat scene and all of that shit. That was Reason, Spat and all of my brothers, my real team.
We got one T, old tight one T.
Boom, is it? But we just it was every day. I mean, the writing thing. I remember I was like at school. There was this dude who used to write Scribbler from South King. His hand style was fire. And it was always Fibbins or Flowmaster.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, it was Brown Punch from Woolworths. And then you mix it up.
Brown Punch.
Brown Punch Leather Dyer from Woolworths.
Whoa, now that's a name we didn't even come across on. Really?
You get the Brown Punch, the Blue Punch was shit, and the Black was kind of see-through or watery, but the Brown Punch...
Held.
Yeah, hell, and you go and get your Postman 30s, and you get your Edding 800s, and you pull them apart. It was about taking the 800 inner, putting it in a Postman, and then dousing it in Flowmaster, and letting it just goo, that black goo just all over the barrels, bro. And that was just a standard procedure. But then from that, it just went on. I just learned about just having that fucking muck in my hands all the time. Just wanted to do it.
You just wanted to do it all the time.
Yeah, but even doing the music, I had a bit of a hiatus because I weren't bumming permanently, but I definitely was there tagging shit all the time. It was my name. I put my name down everywhere and went in. Everything was Cope. And Cope came from teachers at school. I don't know how you're going to cope when you get older. I'll take that.
Is that where it, where it came from? That's amazing.
And then I found out there was a New York right with a C, so I just took the K. I can't spell fucking properly anyway, so the K was perfect for me.
I don't know how you're going to cope. Well, he's doing all right now. Yeah. It's actually, that does lead me on to my next kind of conversation, because you live a way that only some of us can maintain. If you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like there's this borderline of you live by, it's almost like a live by the sword, die by the sword. Like you're rocking some of the most expensive pieces of, you know, polo which you could buy.
What you see is what you get. Yeah. Bro. It's 100%. Yeah. There ain't no ifs, ands, and maybes.
Exactly.
I'm straight up.
He
down.
Wear the biggest, most expensive thing, knowing full well that he's going to paint in it.
No one's fucking taking it. That's what it really was. I dare you to come and take it off me. There used to be a man that used to go to Probito's in the West End, and we used to go there purposely to wait for you to come out with your bag, and you would not go home with whatever you bought. The receipt was in the bag. By the time you get to the station, your shit's back on the shelf, and we got the money, and it's out. It was dirty them times. We did anything, bro. We did anything, did loads. And at the time, when I was coming up secondary school, there was YPB, Ghetto Boys, all of the younger Pecker Boys, Ghetto Boys, younger Pecker Boys. These motherfuckers were like rolling 40, 50 deep on all the buses. And like, you get off at the Elephant, you've got to get on a bus down to Camberwell. That shit was like a warrior's journey, bruv.
Really?
Every day.
Every time.
Every day. It was open back buses. You just run and jump on the back. They would lick your shit and run off the bus.
Yeah.
It was a whole other world. It's South London, brother. It's nothing nice. And then you had PDC and fucking all of them, man, and 28s in Brixton. And they run. They weren't Brixton. They were all the way up straight everywhere around there.
Everything
was set speed. Them man were there.
Well, we're going to stay on this subject, actually, because this is some really untouched, you know, for our age range. I don't know them personally, but I know the names and I know exactly that era.
That was the birth of Murder Zone. Maniacs, because it was Brixton, and they were like, they were just the next generation. That's where MZ came from, on a real, my heart, my head, and knowing a lot of those guys. Big up Osman, I love you, bro. R.I.P.
R.I.P. Rest in peace.
There's a lot of them, man, they're still there, and they're still putting in work, and they have demons with it. And yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love that shit. South London fucking represents anywhere they go, and that's the thing. We don't get lost, brother. We can't be lost. We just go there and we come the fuck out. We could go in and maybe stay, you know?
Yeah,
but
we
just fit in anywhere. I can fit in anywhere.
Yeah. Total just honour to the craft of what South is about.
What's that? I mean, when I first met up with Speak and Char, that shit just changed the whole thing. R.I.P. Speak.
Yeah.
My man,
rest in peace.
We used to hang out on a daily. And we go raising like way out yonder. We'd be like on a train for 2-3 hours and shit, just going to somewhere. And you get off and you full well know that everybody in that area, their children are in school. You ain't in school. What the fuck are you doing here? And that was it. It was straight on top as soon as you come out. Yeah. It could be straight away. But we'd always raise it and we'd always get away with it and we'd be back. But then the raising of the paint become, fuck, why am I raising paint when I could steal something better?
Yeah.
And make some more money and then do something else with it. Mm. You know what I mean?
So what era, what age were you at that point?
I'm like 12, 13, 14. I met Mir and Sham on the same day.
Mad.
And it was Speak was like, I swear this brother lives around here, you know, I see his tags all around by my block. And literally we were walking up the stairs and he's coming down, you know what I mean?
Big up Mir. Big up, Sham.
Little sneaker splashes and that. I see you, my brother. ADO forever, you know what I mean?
And big up Plug as well. Yeah, it goes man, without saying.
I know Pieces, he was about 14 as well because he was South as well.
We
come across each other's path via people we knew and obviously, just in the same
area.
He
was babies back then, bro. Like we're talking 13, 14 years old because he's the same age as us too, isn't he?
Yeah.
You guys have known each other from school days pretty much.
Yeah, man. But we know it was that thing as well. Them time there, you couldn't move with people that weren't in your school. But writing give you that ability to be anywhere with anyone.
Mm.
It really did.
Yeah. And an invisibility as well.
Yeah. That's it. It's all yours, man. Do you. There was no cameras. The cameras game was different as well at them time. It was all kind of brand new.
Yeah, it was fresh.
Yeah, it was fresh. So you just took them with a pinch of salt. Like, no one's ever gone fucking watch those.
Well, from my point, from what I remember, the only cameras that were around were always clubs. It was clubs, but it was never outdoors, out and about. No. Like, you wouldn't even get really in shops like that unless it was like a New Look or Top Man or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, basically, unless you went in Selfridges or somewhere like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It weren't even cameraed up.
No.
That shit was just like, it was a free-for-all them time there.
Hmm.
It really was. It was a free-for-all. It was like, oh, what? 10 of us went in there and all of us took something? Well, I guess you're just going to have to deal with that, right?
I think some of the people that know you closer, so far as an audience viewership, they'd kick me if I didn't ask about your family background. Like, how did you grow up?
Born in Camberwell, raised in Camberwell. My father was from St. Lucia. My mum, English, from Camberwell, believe it or not. But, I grew up with just like... My dad was born in 1932 in St. Lucia. He's 20 years older than my mum, so he just ruled with an iron fist. He wouldn't take anything. It'd be, why the poor snake string you deal with, boy? And it just come out of nowhere, and you're like, fucking hell, yeah.
What, really?
Yeah, it's game on. Like, he just decided right there, and then he just didn't like you for a minute, and he just fuck you up.
Really?
My dad was a bastard. But hey, what can you say? It was whiskey, it was teacher's whiskey, and it was fucking, that was it. He was good to go.
Really?
Yeah, he was good to go. He worked as a paramedic, he worked. His shit was stressful, but, I mean, he would work two shifts. He'd work 7 till 3 in the afternoon or 3 till 11 at night.
Mm-hmm.
And that motherfucker, when he came home at 11 at night, he was a demon, because that's when he started drinking, but he'd drink fast and hard.
Fast and hard?
Yeah. And then he turned wicked on me. But he was, it was that. But, yeah.
And your mum was into, like, she was big church girl.
My mum was church, 100% teetotal. She drank a little bit of wine in a glass with a full-up lemonade. She'd be out for the count. She'd be sweating and fucking melting and leave me alone. I don't want any more of that. But yeah, that was it. You know what I mean? It was a crazy thing.
You got brothers and sisters?
I've got older brothers and sisters in St. Lucia that I never kind of, I've met them, but never really been there, because I found out my dad left and didn't go back for him. That's the way he dealt with it. But yeah, it was, I don't know, my uncles, like I say, I was dropped at my nan's every day from when I was like 3 years old. My uncles were there, they were playing records, hip-hop was brand spanking new, I was in and it just, they always had records, there was always new music, you know what I mean? It was like, and it made me buy records. But also drawing all the time, drawing. I wanted to draw. And it was like, oh, there's big pictures that go with the music.
Yeah.
Oh, man, and it looks like the guy's got a Kango on and he's got visor and he looks like, I want to look like the dudes in the video.
It was of that time, like, you remember, like, Iron Maiden had the Eddie character.
Yeah.
And then you'd have, like, even in the 90s, I always go back to Far Side album because, like, the roller coaster, because it kind of, that whole jazz era had that roller coaster thing. Electro and the Breakers, the B-boy look, you know.
That was it, literally that. That's when it was. When you had Norman Cook, Mr. Fatboy Slim doing the Electro Selectors album, basically. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like part 1 to 4 or whatever.
Incredible,
it was.
Yeah.
And then,
with the kind of instructions on how
to.
The
instructions, and there was the how to breakdance fucking records, and, you know, it was crazy them times. And then even the kids' magazines come with like a little flat press record on the front of them of some kind of bollocks or whatever it was, you know what I mean? But that shit there, that whole era of like the music as well, the transition was just like, it was hip hop and then it was kind of, but there was that house, that sort of, that's the big, like the house, the end of the house thing being in London. As it were, when it was like Todd Terry times and Marshall Jefferson and all of
that's
those
right.
guys, right? And then it was the hip hop thing, and then the funk, obviously, because people were like, oh, that's got that song on it, and like collecting breaks.
Yeah.
And then it was Jungle, and Jungle just changed the whole perspective of London for a good minute.
Ever.
Man. Yeah, forever.
It changed everything.
Forever.
And it
was something that it was ours, and it would belong to us. And unless you went out to try and find that shit, you would never have it.
No.
you wouldn't have it.
It was so low key.
It didn't. Yeah, exactly.
Like pre-Black Market Records, really.
Well, exactly. Unity was there kind of first. There was Lucky Spin, then there was Black Market, and then, oh man, I used to deliver flyers to all of these places because I used to work for Laserdrome in Peckham.
It still goes back to your kind of street origin, because if you're a flyer guy at a young age, you're just like, not only are you the person that delivers and knows what's going on, but also you're the entry hole for the party, yeah, because then you've got like yourself a guest list. It's on.
I know I've got a bag of people that are DJing somewhere else, but
that are seeing you, right, and you're seeing them,
like,
right?
Jackknife and that, like,
yeah. Crazy,
like, rough stuff. DJ Rough Stuff. He used to live right there. He took me. He was the first person to take me to South Bank to skate.
Wow.
He nicked me from the park. He went, "Your nan won't mind. We're going this way." We jumped on the bus. We went over to South Bank, and we came back to the park. And it was just like, but he lived right around the corner from my nan. And I remember him getting wicked. And IC3 went to my secondary school. And
mad. It was just like, big up IC3.
But it was always in Black Market.
It's all intrinsic. Like, everything is all fed into each other, isn't it?
Yeah, it's basically, there's never 6 degrees of separation. It's one or two people you meet.
Yeah.
Like, if I want Jay-Z, I'll call MK. He'll call Dizzy, and Dizzy will give me him, I'm sure. Because that's just the route now, because we know these people, and we've been here, and we've... Tyson said to me one time, "I don't know that person. Do you know them?" And I went, "No, I don't." He went, "They must have turned up yesterday, because between me and you,
we don't know them.
We know everybody everywhere, everyone."
It's true. It's true. And I think that's testament to the scene. And also, everyone's always up for, like, fucking putting a call in, you know. And if someone comes in that you're not so sure about, it's like, and now you look at the other person, it's like, who's that then? You don't know who it is. Raises suspicion, doesn't it?
Well, that's it, especially in the writer circles, like when you're a Hall of Fame or whatever, which people nowadays, a Hall of Fame was just the worst place. In the original times, it was the worst place you could have gone with paint. You could never go in there with paint. You stand and you look from the nearest block of flats down and see if you could see that. I remember going to Patmore when Prime and Fuel were painting the Promised Land painting. And that was like the first.
You saw that?
Yeah, I saw that live, bro. I was there, me, Char, couple other dudes, and Speak, and yeah.
That's mad.
Yeah, I saw that. I stood there watching two dudes up a ladder and thinking, yo, these dudes are going
different. Yeah.
We was just standing there with like fucking 10 tins of five steel wheels and
tenants.
Yeah, literally tenants. It was tenants and special breeze.
Yeah.
Super Heldenbrow that we nicked from fucking Waterloo out of the odd bins. You know what I mean? Like,
you're like a hip hop fly. In all the best ways. You're there. You're ever present. You see it. You kind of feed off it.
Yeah, man.
Like, bro, like I cannot emphasize it anymore that you really are the fucking embodiment of like street culture that actually in many respects holds way more fucking stories than can ever be told on a podcast, and equally because you live so differently to everybody else that I know. Like, I don't know how you survive, bro. I don't know how you survive.
That's a good question, mate. I just keep it moving, brother. It's that, isn't it? Retox, never detox. Put some more on the fucker. Just, what? You feel sad for yourself? Fuck you, bro. Carry on. Oh, what? Yeah, your shit. Yeah, of course your shit. Fuck that shit, bro. Like, it takes a while to get out of that. Could be sat behind the door pissing in bottles for 5 days with that shit going on in your head. Can't get out the door. And then all of a sudden, boom. I went and painted 2 panels in a week. You know what I'm saying? And then it's just... I recorded for like fucking 8 hours at my friend's house, just making beats, like not even making beats myself, but telling him, no, that sounds like that, and then putting shit down. Whether not writing, just literally gunning shit and coming up with fucking albums worth of material.
See what I'm saying? Real hip hop shit, UK shit. See, Buck stops here. Real talk.
I'm here, man. It's hard to do, though. It's really difficult. It's like, lost my mums, lost my pops, moved out of my house, was homeless for basically 6 months, something like that. It just, you know, things grind on you, and then, but right now I look like I'm worth a million, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the truth be told, a lot of it's a facade. Everybody wants to look fly and fresh and fucking make everybody think that they're winning. How many people have you said to, you all right, mate? And they go, yeah. And you full well know they're not. You know what I'm saying?
And turn actually, turn and up, turn up, turn
away.
Yeah, turn
and
a blind
eye. Quite happily, like, yeah, all right, yeah, he said, yeah. And, you know, all you really did want to do was turn around and say to someone, yo, I'm actually fucking not all right. But who wants to listen to that? So you don't. You know what I'm saying?
You don't, or that.
Well, just people in general. It's probably a lot to do with the suicide rate of men, to be quite honest with you as well.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I've got a lot of friends. Mm. Literally, a good friend of mine recently, just before Christmas, said that actual thing. I'd seen him on the Thursday and I asked him, was he all right? And he said, oh, you know me, and let me walk away. And then on the Sunday evening, I found out that he'd actually done something to himself and he was gone. So it's that. People won't listen, for one. Or, you know, they want to listen, but they're just not dedicated to having other people's problems because they think that what they've got to deal with is obviously more important, which a lot of the time it is, because you have to look after yourself first and foremost. Otherwise, who the hell are you going to fucking help?
Yeah.
But then again, there's a lot of people. I'm personally one of them. I can solve anyone else's problem, but don't ask me to fix me up. Don't ask me to do anything for me.
Yeah, but that's the mark of a... That's deeper, and I understand that because I think I do that as well in a way, but... when it comes to the beatbox thing, and you know this from the fucking truth, the truth be told, because you were there when I first ever grabbed the mic. You were there.
I know.
You were there. So you know that my time was just fucking luck.
Monday nights in Herbal, bruv. Mixologist upstairs. Yeah. And downstairs you'd have every single wickedest jungle DJ that you could ever possibly see. And it wasn't even the fact that they were playing. It was Monday night. They were all just there in the dance.
Yeah.
Every single one.
Do you remember the Spit Kingdom nights?
Yeah.
On
they
the
were
Tuesday.
Fucking off. Oh. But Tuesdays as well, there was WKD in Camden that used to have London Paris connection.
That's
and then
right.
You go down to Magna Traction used to be on a Tuesday too at one point. So that
right.
would just fuck up the run-ins. But and I mean, I remember you used to go to the African Centre to Funkin'
Pussy
on a Saturday.
Big
night.
Up Hoochie, big up Dump,
yeah
exactly.
For real. And Hooch at the start of that shit was where I first kind of got on a mic that was live.
Yeah.
And then the next one was Scratch's first birthday.
We cannot forget Scratch. Wow.
At the crossbar.
Yeah,
in King's Cross.
Exactly.
We don't even exist.
Yeah,
no
yeah,
more.
Yeah.
It was like a
long
time.
And I've just tunnel. Herbal don't exist no more, neither.
Nah, neither.
Scary.
Nah, for real.
O-Bar, do you remember the O-Bar?
The O-Bar, yeah. Come on. At the bottom, that's where Spread Love on a Monday night as well, was the guys like DJ Yoda used to play there, and I remember they had
Fat Lace Crew and all that.
Yeah, Fat Lace, all of them dudes, and missed all the dudes from Bongos like Hugh and all of them guys, and Cam and them. Mm. But I remember they had Ugly Duckling in there one night, and I freestyled on the mic while the DJ was there, and I ended up in Hip Hop Connection as the big fucking full page fucking. That's the big four-page piece, you know what I mean?
That's the ultimate win.
But yeah, man, that's shit. Oh, gosh.
And then now we're in the West End, you know, O-Bar, Soho, but then we had the End, the Hop.
The End was crazy at the Hop. DJ MK found some footage of me at 18 freestyling in there. It was everybody. There was Spice, Skinny, everybody that you could possibly think of. Even Lewis and Champions and all of them, they were out them times, and it was
Champions of Nature, the whole thing.
You know, Apollo was my auntie's next door neighbour. That's really like
Apollo from
Champions of Nature.
Wow.
My brother, head nod. Big up, my brother.
Big up, Apollo.
Yeah, and that's like
Super T.
Come on, all of them dudes, man. Right? Yeah. AM, I see all the time right now. Still, he's a big Polo guy as well. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Bar Rumba
on a fucking, oh God, on a Tuesday with like, it was like, what was it? It was like £1 a drink. £1 a drink. But that was like Will Bankhead, fucking DJ, and James Lavelle, and all of them dudes. It was basically It was Ninja Tune. It was fucking...
Pre-Fabric, you know.
Long time before Fabric existed. Fabric was the way to Farringdon, bro.
Yeah.
That was all Fabric used to be. Yeah, that shit. That, well, Fabric was just like long time after.
Yeah, it was a long time. It almost like set. I don't know what came before that, but when it that kind of set, really. It wasn't.
But basically, at the time, it was all the jungle raves like Tasco Warehouse, yeah, fucking Labyrinth,
yeah,
all of that, like, and even Roller Express, all of them places.
The kind of rave huge, model, yeah.
Stratford Rex, all of them shit, yeah. There. That was there, you know what I mean? But them times there was real parties. People would literally take rigs and break buildings and have parties,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know. I know exactly what you're saying. And if we fast forward then to Deck Effects, where they had like the drum and bass and the hip-hop in the same space.
Yeah.
Now, they weren't... There was a culture for that was coming through off, at the time.
Off the back of that, I must big up my brother Lofa. Swamp 81 took fucking Mass over, just literally having that night there once a month, and that place was packed solid.
Packed
but
out.
That was it. It was them man there that brought them in the first place and put it all together, you know what I mean? No, there was a point. Do you remember that point in time where in Brixton there was no flyers with Jungle, there was no flyers with Ragga, there was no flyers with hip-hop. They just wouldn't put it in funk, soul, grooves, drums and bass, like reggae music, like anything else but those words, because those words just associated trouble.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That and was it just jam. Used to get fuck up on a regular. Fridge Bar on a Monday night. Wednesday night, Rodigan. There was just so much reggae as well. It was just loads going on.
Big up Fridge. Fridges, yeah, that was a beautiful fucking time, wasn't it?
Bruv, the Fridge Bar on a Monday night downstairs was all your wickedest selectors. All it was just amazing. And it was records. And it was on from like 7 till like 4 in the morning. It was free. You literally go in there and just say to the man behind the bar, give me a Guinness. £2, safe, gone. And you're there for the night, you know what I mean?
I mean, you've been in all these environments and you've just jumped up and freestyle, don't you, really?
Yeah, anywhere I go, man. I get on reggae sound systems, I get on open mics. I remember the Deadbeat Weekend.
Oh, that was a... Because they did two, didn't they? They did one in a...
That one in, like, the Butlins or something that time. It was crazy.
It was crazy.
It was a whole weekend. And, like, Breaking Bread were doing a thing there, so I was on the mic for that. But there was everybody there. And I remember there was, like, one little chalet place that everyone... There was just, like, this rammed spot with music coming out of it. And I walked over there, and it was fucking... It was Dilla, Madlib, and fucking... And Quasimodo in there freestyling and taking the whole thing over. And what? I just walked
in
there...
Did you see them live?
I freestyled in the fucking party. It was just, like, a room with a bunch of dudes, like, packed belly to back because they were in there. And I just went bananas on that shit and ended up fucking taking that for a while. I was just rhyming with them dudes for a while.
Really?
Yeah, man.
That is bonkers. That ridiculous. So what, you just run with them for a bit?
I just literally in that party for that. And, like, when they were about and whatnot, yeah. And when Doom was over, he was staying with Quake and, like, bumped into Doom a few times. Lee Scratch Perry... All
rest
of these
in peace,
dudes,
yeah.
Man. Walk down South
Doom,
Bank,
rest
East
in
Scratch,
peace.
My team, yeah. Roots Maneuver. That guy there is hard to walk around with, man.
Really? Because he's famous?
Well, just everybody knows him from everywhere. It's like,
especially South as well.
Yeah,
God.
In South London, it's carnage, but yeah. That's a king to me, man. He's a fucking superstar.
It's
in my
funny
eyes.
You say that, because Skip's been on a podcast and, like, it was, you know, it was hard to defer from, you know, him being one of the door openers for one of our rare breeds of MCs.
He brought the sound through. He brought the reggae sound system that existed the whole time.
Yeah.
That was ignored. He put that on the thing and just did his thing on it, and it just changed it all up.
Yeah.
It opened doors for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. Rodney, we'd sit there, make a beat, and a chorus would come out of nowhere. Like, something would happen. And I'd freestyle my verse, he'd write his verse. He'd tell me to write something, it would not happen. I'd just do my thing, and then everything that was recorded, that was put out and pressed, was all freestyles that I did.
What?
Everything.
It's how you roll. You just bust freestyle.
That's what happened. Like, yeah, there's... I've got a couple written bits that I've done, like, in years gone by, but
yeah.
You can really hear me speaking the words off of a piece of paper.
Mm, and so it's not the same vibe.
So I got this tune that I did with Roots Maneuver, Natural, and, like, one of the bits on it is... The hip and to the hop and back and once again, my friend, and this is how we do it when we mix and blend and change the blend. I dare you to write on a bit of fucking paper and say to yourself, yeah, I'm going to read that off and that's how it's going to come out. Fuck your life. Yeah, you can hear it and do it again, but yeah. There's no fucking way that you can write that down.
With the same energy.
Even just to do it, like, what the fuck even is that?
The bounce, it's not there. Exactly. You can't just read that
thing. Exactly that, and it's, you know...
Do you rate rappers like Jay-Z and that just throw down like that?
Yeah, I do. It's a fucking art, mate. Mm. Like, to be able to just come off your head. There's so many MCs. For how many years you've been hearing Americans go, I'm a freestyle, or yo, you gonna freestyle? The whole Sway fucking radio show, all the fucking, as you are, all, every single one of the radio shows, Funk Flex, all of them, they're written verses.
Yeah, they are, all the time.
They're written verses, just on a different beat. That's their freestyle.
Do you think the Black Thought freestyle, do you think that's an exception? Because he just went in, like...
Black Thought's fucking dope. I've been on stage with him, rhyme with Black Thought.
Yeah. You've been on stage with everybody, bro. I remember so many times at Jazz Cafe. I remember you jumping up at my shows countless times. Like... Like, you're about.
And I'm an MC. What could
possibly go wrong, right? But you know, exactly. I mean, you're about. Like, you've done. I mean, you've probably got like an A to Z catalogue of people that you've jammed up and jammed with.
Yeah, man. I've been on a lot of things, man. Alabama 3.
Yeah.
Clyde Stubblefield, James Brown's funky drummer.
Talk to us about that. How did that happen?
Well, Clyde basically was doing a show over here and stayed at my uncle's house in Camberwell. But the crypt of the church, obviously, where the jazz club is, he was using that to rehearse every day because he plays like 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
Just smokes weed in a pipe and plays drums. 16-piece kit with a 21-piece cymbals. And that guy just rides beats.
That's his job.
That's all he does is just tap that shit all day, every day, every day, every day.
When he makes the noises as well.
Yeah, that's what James Brown fucking stole that shit, 100%. If you hear this dude, because he's there, dum, dum, bam, that's his shit. That's really? What he does. Yeah, it's literally that. Not only told me that himself.
Yeah, but you did, can clock.
I could hear it because he was playing the beat and he's like, it was getting me to fucking just, to bully because he was like on the eight, just like as he's hitting, you know what I'm saying? And he's fucking, that dude was such a vibe, man. I ended up doing Jazz Cafe, Ronnie Scott's. I think we did the 100 Club. I did like 5 shows in Camberwell. That dude, man, it's crazy. There was like a 10-piece funk band with him.
What?
And it's me just there, the only MC, like holding it down for like a 2-hour set. And it's a funk band, so them motherfuckers just carry on going.
Yeah.
Like, if no one literally pulls the plug on them, they just keep going.
Yeah. And they look at you when you stop.
Because someone always needs to go, and more. And then this all comes back together.
Yeah.
It just starts again, and you're like, shit, not the same beat again, fuck. But yeah, you might get a 15-minute beat of the same fucking beat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And you've got to work with it.
Yeah, you've got to work with it. Ty was like, don't stop doing it, bro. When I was with Ty one time, he saw me on the mic.
Yeah.
He was like, yo, don't stop doing it, you know, Coke. Please don't stop doing it. You're fucking dope. And I'm like, I don't see it. And then next thing I know, I'm there with Roots Maneuver. I'm there with Ricky Rankin. I'm there with Shawnee T. The whole of Banana Clan.
Banana Clan in the building, thing. Yeah.
When we were working out of Alaska Studios. Big up Bev. We love you, darling. That shit there, that was just a whole other realm. We're in a railway arch in the middle of the day, big massive sunshine outside. And we couldn't tell you whether it was 2 a.m. or 2 p.m, but it was just dark permanently. Gabriel, Strange Love, smashing beats permanently. There was like 2 rooms, and there was like 3 recorded rehearsal rooms downstairs. Them shits was full all the time. Some of the wickedest bands in there as well. Some of the wickedest bands. And then when we left there, we went over to Strong Rooms.
East London,
Curtain Road.
Yeah.
You're there and you look at the thing and Hot Chip, Sophia Respects,
Yeah.
Skunk from Skunk and Nancy.
The Kooks, all that. They're all there.
Skunk, I knew because the drummer, her percussionist actually, lived on my road. And
really?
He basically was there, saw me outside. She saw me and was like, what are you doing here? I'm like, I'm recording with Roots Maneuver. I love Roots Maneuver. Can we do a track? Boom, they recorded right there.
And that's how that happened?
Instantly, yeah. On the Forever Evolution album. That's when that happened.
Straight wow.
But we recorded loads of shit. We did that track Natural. We was in Tottenham in a place. I held a curtain around him as the vocal booth. He held the curtain around me, and that's how that got recorded. That shit came out on a limited yellow vinyl press for,
I remember
for
that.
Record Day. I never even got one. I never got no money from it. I never got one either. I don't even think Rodney got one, to be honest with you. But yeah, it was like... And then Forever Evolution, the stuff that I did on there with him, Crowbars, that came out. That was a freestyle as well. It's like, I don't know, man. It's just, it's easier for me to do that. I can't, if I sit to write, I just don't. I don't know where I'm going with it.
At this point, how do you best describe your life at the moment? Like, how do you define those eras where it's like, fucking hell, I'm performing with fucking James Brown's drummer. I introed Skunk and Nancy to Roots Maneuver. I've been pivotal in so many jams that, you know, I can count them all off the one times I remember you. How does that resonate in for where you are right now?
Where I'm at right now, I wish that shit was still happening, like permanent, like it was. It was every day. It was a wake up and get out.
But it's still happening now, bro.
I'm doing more now.
Yeah, seems to me that you're doing a lot.
I'm trying to be back out in this.
It seems like it, bro. I'm saying it from a success point of view of like you just haven't stopped. You're like an energizer bunny that just doesn't stop to your own detriment of your own lifestyle and health. You just keep going.
Yeah, I know. It's that. It's really that.
Isn't it? It is. It's like I'm not seeing like any blockages in the road, and I'm thinking to myself, yo, how long have we got with Coke before he's just fucking, you know, because he's just keeping on going. He's like burning on fucking full cylinders.
Well, I come to the conclusion a long time ago that like I'm here till it's over, and when it's finished, they might let me go. They might let me leave and go to sleep, but I don't think that, like, I'm just, I don't know, I put myself through a bag of rigmarole. I've been in so many dark places as well, and shit that's been happening recently, and just not having nowhere to live, like, pretty much being homeless at certain points. You know what I mean? But it's that. I'm maintained. Like I say, what you see is what you get. And I'm here, brother. I won't go nowhere.
Bruv, you don't get your flowers nearly fucking enough, bruv. I'm throwing that the fuck out there. You do not get your fucking flowers. And it pains me because I know how much work you put in.
Well, it's just a daily... It's just part of the everyday thing, isn't it? Without it, I don't fucking live. Without the smell of spray paint, without ink on my fingers, without shit splashed all over my fucking £500 coat, without being sitting at the skate park, just fucking in the freezing cold with the wind blasting you in your face, just with people because you're just talking to somebody and you're catching a vibe. That shit's all part of the build, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
It's the way it's built, it's the way I'm built.
Mm.
I want to be everywhere. All the time. I want everybody to not necessarily know me, but I want to know everybody, like, and see what their play is, you know what I'm saying? Mm. What you do. First thing of most of my conversations is people ask me what I do. I'm an MC and I paint.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? 9 out of 10 times, those people are creatives as well.
Yeah.
They're in film. They're at uni, they're doing something, they've been doing... Oh, look, I'm an artist as well, check out my shit.
No, but you're a real artist. Like, where's your resilience? Because you're resilient. A lot of artists, as soon as it gets too tight, too much, they go. They bounce.
Oh, no, I've been fucking... I went from Barack Obama, everyone wants my fucking picture, to Mr. UKIP, fuck off, don't even look at me. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
I've been in that situation more than one time. I've been right at the top of the ladder, and instead of someone putting their hand out and raising you up, they kick over the fucking ladder. And it's that quick.
Where do you get that resilience from? Like, what gets you up and what makes you think, oh, yeah, man, I just got to go. I might be missing out there. My FOMO's on fleek. I've got to go down to this club and just bust a MC. I just got a freestyle.
If I get there and I get, I'm going in. I can't afford to get there. I'm a bunk the train. I'm a steal a beer on the way. I'm a get to where I'm going. And 9 out of 10 times, like I say, I'll bump into someone outside, or I'll talk to the security because I've known them for fucking 20 years from being on all different club doors and talk to them. Got in and out with all kinds of things, paid some of them sometimes, you know what I mean, to do work in their buildings, you know what I mean? But
where's that resilience come from? Where does that come from, bro?
I don't know, man. I guess it's just built to last. I don't even know. I just, a lot, like I say, a lot of the time it's really difficult to get up and get out. But when I'm fucking on and I'm out already, this shit is like, it's on full tank.
Yeah.
Even though I'm running on empty.
Yeah.
I might not eat for 2 or 3 days sometimes. I might not sleep like that. You can ask P about that. People tell you 100% this motherfucker just, I've seen him sleep on a Sunday afternoon in the pub after a polo shoot, because I've been up since like Thursday. I just came back from Brighton that morning and I did a polo shoot with him and then blast the fuck
out. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But I just straight up sit like that and conk out.
Where's your energy come from, bro?
Bro, I've been doing this. I don't know. I just do it.
Do you think the knockback on that is because the energy burns so much and you're on,
I got to that point of like,
Does it get you down?
It can throw me well off balance, bro.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it really destroys me, you know what I mean? Like not being able to just get up and get out. But I will be like, I will sit and be awake and do all kinds of fucking things. And then, but it'd be like 3 days. And then I'll sit there like that, conk out for 10 minutes and my body feels like it's been asleep for fucking hours.
Mm.
And then I'm back into that fucking, wait for another day. You know what I'm saying? Till I eventually just might, my body just says, you know, shut, mate.
Mm. Really? And then it's just collapse.
But if the light comes through the fucking window, that's me, I'm up again. I'm still there, I'm there. I'm there. Shit.
Does that come from this is a psychiatry lesson. I'm just asking. I'm only asking. Mm. Like, your dad was a big worker.
Mm.
Yeah. And did you think, like, some of that translates into your behaviour of like, because it certainly does with my fucking dad. I know that his disciplines were, I'm getting up in the morning, I'm going to bed. Doesn't matter whether it's work or not, I'm definitely getting up the time I was meant to get up. It's that, innit?
Yeah, exactly that. My dad worked on a farm all of his life in St. Lucia, do you know what I mean? So it was that thing of like, come, when the fucking cock will crow, you're up.
Get the fuck up, yeah.
Yeah, and that's before fucking daylight.
Yeah.
And he was that dude. He was like, ready for war ready. Even when he passed away at 84, he was still up 5 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's just the way he's built. And then come off 10, 11, he put himself down.
Mm.
None of this 8 o'clock business. No, man. Mm-hmm. He's like, I went the whole day. And then, boom, 5 o'clock again in the morning. Straight up. It's brutal. I used to be the same though. I'd get up in the morning, like for instance, this is a Monday morning. I'd been out since the whole weekend by this time. I'd gone home, had a shower and then put myself down. But I might sleep from like 2, wake up at 5:30, get out, go to work, be on site at 7 o'clock in the morning, be at work till 4. Sometimes 5, 6 o'clock, leave there, go back to Camberwell, wherever I was working in the city, or Canary Wharf, or whatever the fuck it may be. Because at them time there, I was laying floor panels, mate, like fucking access floors, just hardcore graft.
While we're on Canary Wharf, actually, big up man at ADL as well, by the way, while we're on that subject. Heard about your parkour activities recently.
Yes, well, I am. Big up.
Big up there.
So, yeah, and then I'd get home, hold a fresh, get changed, get on a bus and go to Camden or go to wherever the fuck, whatever the night was on that day. And then be out till 2, 3 in the morning because nothing ever finished till 2, ever, even on a Monday night. Uh-huh. Look at fucking Bar Rumba, that was what, it went on till 5? 4 or 5 in the morning.
Do you remember those old school taxi drivers that weren't legally taxi drivers? Mm-hmm. And we used to befriend them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Here's 30 quid, get me home, thank you, bye.
There you go. basically someone that was like, oh, I fancy a bit of money, and he just drive out their car.
Big up Chris. I don't think you'll ever watch this, but there was a taxi driver called Chris that used outside Herbal all the time.
Yeah, I remember him.
You remember him?
I remember him.
Yeah, he was sound.
He did loads, mate. He was doing loads. He used to drive busy. Me and Sniper around a little bit.
Yeah, big up Chris. Look, and I might just add as well, big up Oliver Sudden, because he put me onto this really early Doors, and to be fair, he said I'd come on as well. But, you know, you and me need no introduction, and moreover, I think your story just... We could honestly, we've got to do a part two. We have to do a part two, yeah. Bruv. I just want to finish off with this sentiment. I mean, you know, with all we've talked about here, the highs and lows and life as was to as is now, I think the sentiment is be more like Cope.
Oh, drop me out,
bruv. I mean it. Just be more like Cope. Like, seize the moment, carpe diem, go get it. Because that's really what it's about, isn't it?
Like, bro, it's just that, isn't it? It's just, are you willing to do it? Yeah. Are you going to try? Are you... Every fucking win starts with a failure.
Yeah.
You have to fucking fail. You have to fucking crash.
Yeah.
Before you can burn, is it? Before you can actually set this shit up and put yourself together properly, yeah. You have to hit the lowest of the low. Yeah. Maybe not. Maybe a lot of people get through it easier than that. But really?
Are you really taking a risk? Are you really going the distance for yourself? You know?
I really am. Yeah. And right now I've got an art studio that I'm working with, a good friend of mine, Magpie.
Yeah, big up Magpie.
And this shit's a fortune, but I'm doing this shit.
Yeah.
It's something that's needed to be done.
Yeah.
Can't sit in your house and do that shit. Can't leave shit on walls that gets fucking buffed and gone over every fucking 10 minutes. It's all good.
Yeah.
I'm here to do it and I'm here to stay, bro. I'll see you on the B-side.
100%. That's all I want to hear, baby. That's all I want to
fucking... See you on the B-side, bro.
Listen, we're definitely doing a part two. Fucking South London's Cope in the building. And if you don't know, what we'll do is we'll chuck a few links in the bottom there for people to check out any of your music. Because I know you've got some bits, but we'll set up a little thing so people can check out your stuff. Because he's a rare bird that flies around and he fucking comes into all of the clubs and sets things alight. So, yeah, Cope in the house. Killer Keller podcast, that like him was out of fashion, serves you fucking right, all right? Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't, would you? Remember, crime don't pay, neither did I. Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't. Easy!
Love.